Options Policy Radio, offering a unique perspective on everything. Geopolitics, culture creation, the reality of the world we live in. Coming to you live from New York City, your host, Pierce Redmond.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Porkins Policy Radio. As always, I am your host, Pierce Redmond, and you can find this show here at American Freedom Radio, AmericanFreedomRadio.com, as well as on my website, which is PorkinsPolicyReview.com. And later on in the week, on Friday nights, this show is rebroadcast on a bunch of other networks. And of course, you know, you can download it directly from my website. You can find it on YouTube. And fingers crossed, sometime later this week or early next week, this show will also be available on iTunes. This is like a long time coming, I know. I've mentioned it here and there. Faithful listeners will remember from previous episodes I had mentioned getting it on iTunes. But it's basically all but ready to go. I just had to tweak a few things. There are some issues with FeedBurner and the particular feed that I was trying to submit to iTunes over the weekend. It just didn't like it. But hopefully we'll figure out all those bugs and you'll be able to download it on iTunes, which is actually the way I listen to pretty much everything. You know, it's almost always on iTunes. Today we are going to be talking about Jeffrey Epstein and some of the recent things that have been going on vis-a-vis the case right now. We've got the defamation case, of course, that is ongoing, that Virginia Guaffieri, all people will know her as Virginia Roberts, but Guaffieri is her married name now, that is going on against Ghislaine Maxwell. Some interesting stuff has been going on with that, and we'll be covering that probably a little bit later on in the show, maybe towards the end. But there is a brand new case that is going on that was just filed. So on January 26th, Jane Doe number 43 filed a civil complaint in the Southern District of New York, which is where the defamation suit is also ongoing, is in the Southern District. Filed this complaint against Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, Sarah Kellen, Leslie Groff, and Natalia Malyshev, alleging that they were all engaged in a sex trafficking venture and enterprise in which the plaintiff was forced to engage in commercial sex acts, and that the defendants profited from the sexual trafficking of said plaintiff and obstructed investigations into the client, you know, into the plaintiff's well-being and things. I'll briefly read essentially what is the count in this case, what's going on. So the defendants individually and together within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States in interstate and foreign commerce and or affecting interstate and foreign commerce knowingly recruited, enticed, harbored, transported, provided, maintained, patronized, solicited, threatened, forced, and coerced plaintiff to engage in commercial sex acts. Such actions by defendants were undertaken with knowledge and or reckless disregard of the fact and their threats of force, fraud, coercion, and combination of such means would be used and were in fact used in order to cause plaintiff to engage in commercial sex acts. And then, you know, in doing so, the defendant violated 18 U.S.C. You know, we don't need all that. It also, within the count, it says that defendants additionally profited from the sex trafficking of plaintiffs, obstructed investigations of the violations, attempted and conspired to violate, and succeeded in violating. Now, this criminal complaint right now, it's posted online. There's some various places. Raider Online has a version of it up right now, so you can check it out there. I, of course, will have I'll post up the version that I got, which is the same one, which is off Pacer, in the show notes, or maybe I'll link to the Radar one, whichever is easier. But so you can go through it. It's about like 23, 25 pages, I think, altogether. But this is a brand new case, and I wanted to talk about this because it's interesting for a variety of reasons. One is that this is going after Epstein directly. So in the case of this defamation suit that Virginia Guaffieri is using against Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein is named in it, but he's not the person that she's essentially suing, which is Maxwell. Whereas this, Jane Doe 43, she is going directly after Jeffrey Epstein, as well as Maxwell, and also some other people. So Sarah Kellen, who I've spoken about several times before on the show, and also I think on Ed Opperman's show as well. Sarah Kellen, who now goes by Sarah Kensington, and we'll talk a little bit about her later. But she's a figure for people – I don't know, fellow Epstein researchers or whatnot, that name should be familiar. Leslie Groff is fairly new to me, although I had heard of her somewhere, I think, early on. She was, I believe it was an assistant. And Natalia Malyshev is a new character. I've not heard that name before. And this is a really fascinating case for a variety of reasons. One is that it does actually dovetail with Virginia Guaffieri's case. So for people that have been following Virginia Guaffieri's defamation suit against Ghislaine Maxwell, they will have seen that, you know, so her main lawyers are, of course, Brad Edwards, as well as Paul Casal. They've been with her from very early on. But she's also being represented by a few other people, John Pottinger. But more importantly, she's represented by two lawyers from the firm Boies, Schiller, and Flexner. So that is David Boies' law firm, very, very famous lawyer. People will know that name. He is the guy that defended Al Gore in the Bush v. Gore case, you know, about the election and all that. Very high profile. So that's a huge thing in and of itself. So she's got two lawyers from that firm representing her. Virginia Guaffieri does, which should, you know, again, lend some weight. This is very – these are serious people. Boies, Schiller, Flexner is a very serious law firm. You know, if you go to their website, these people are not playing around. They're not screwing around. This is a – if they're taking on this case, they're staking their professional reputation on this. So that should sort of, you know, again, lend credibility if you needed to be convinced that this is real. That should lend a lot of credibility to what Virginia Guaffieri is saying. Now, David Boies himself is personally representing Jane Doe 43. Again, that should really raise some, not alarm bells, but that should, again, we should be taking what this criminal complaint says, which I'm going to get to in a minute, very seriously. If David Boies is taking this on, okay, personally again, you know, it's not like he's delegating this to somebody else. He's personally taking on this case. That's a big deal. This is not a guy who's just going to, whatever, I'll you know, take the case on of this woman and, you know, what's the big deal, you know. This is serious. So very important. And, again, very interesting that they've got, you know, this firm is representing these two clients. So I would also think that this might mean that they're really working on something relatively serious or big, that maybe there is, you know, there's some overlap between this. I am thinking that Virginia Guaffieri probably knows who Jane Doe 43 is, that they either met or know of each other. So pretty big deal, you know, that this is happening. But let's get a little bit more into some of the specifics. And what I'll be really kind of going through is this, essentially the criminal complaint. And, you know, just sort of before we get into this, I just want to kind of say again, you know, dealing with the Epstein case, I take it very seriously. I don't really, well, I do speculate, you know, on the radio show and stuff. I try not to when it comes to this. I take this very seriously, and I think we all should. There's sort of this, I don't know, a tendency to all media to kind of just, you know, Epstein is everywhere, and this is, I don't know, they miss the seriousness of this, and I think we should kind of maintain the seriousness. And also, again, when there are publicly available records out there, we've got, you know, these are court documents, these are criminal complaints, these are things that have been submitted as exhibits in the cases. We should really be going from that, not, you know, I think that, you know, Epstein is a Mossad agent who wants to, you know, I don't know, destroy Donald Trump or whatever the sort of nonsense that's being floated out there. There's a lot more to this. We should take it kind of seriously. And so essentially what is laid out in this criminal complaint is that Epstein was the head of this sex trafficking enterprise. That's what they refer to in this criminal complaint. The Jane Doe 43 appears to be South African, and that's she was living in New York when she was approached by, I believe it was Natalia Malyshev, who offered to help her. She was, I guess, an aspiring model and fashion student, and basically, she was told that Jeffrey Epstein was a wealthy billionaire philanthropist who was known to help young girls and women in achieving their goals and whatnot, and that she would have to give him a body massage, which soon became sexual, and Epstein continually pressured her to have sex, forced her to have sex every time that she would give him a massage. And this was all under the guise that he would be providing her with recommendation to get into FIT, the Fashion Institute of Technology here in New York, that he would help pay for her tuition, that he had all sorts of connections, that he could get her a modeling job, which he probably could. Although, would you really want that job? And that, she had to continue providing him with sex. And, of course, there was this threat. There was this constant threat and coercion that if she did not comply with his demands, with Maxwell's demands, with basically whatever demands that the two of them and others put forth to her, that he would destroy her career before it even started, that he would make sure that she never got into FIT or any institute of higher education, as it says in the complaint, that they would make sure that she could never be a model, and scaring her. And I'm sure that there were other aspects of that as well. You're this young girl, and possibly even underage, and you're this powerful guy saying all these things. I mean, God only knows what else he can do. Now, she describes that Epstein had sex virtually every day, and that his particular preference was for girls between the ages of 13 and 25, and that Epstein and company preyed on young females' personal, psychological, financial, and related vulnerabilities, offering money, shelter, transportation, employment, admission into educational institutions, educational tuition itself, and other things of value in exchange for sex. And that this sex trafficking venture and enterprise was a hierarchical structure with Epstein and Maxwell at the very top and then underlings directly below them. And these would be Sarah Kellen, Leslie Groff, Natalia Malyshev, as well as unnamed co-conspirators such as housekeepers and butlers, quote, an airline pilot who I believe is referring to Larry Viskoski, who, again, I've spoken about many times before. He's been one of the few people that's actually been deposed in connection to various lawsuits and stuff against Epstein, where he actually did speak very fairly candidly. He's obviously, this guy had been working for Epstein for years and years and years, and had obviously been coached on what to say, how to answer particular questions, from law enforcement or lawyers. So he's fairly open, and again, it's worth, I know I've posted it in one of the episodes. I'll try and find it and post it up again after this, or I'll link to the episode. His deposition is worth going through because he does provide a lot of information and something of a window into how there's certain aspects of Epstein's sexual trafficking enterprise, from the, at least from the standpoint of his pilot. It's not everything. Again, he's very careful about what he says and what he will allude to. And my guess is that, Viskoski was told to give the deposition by Epstein, because as Jane Doe 43 describes, everybody that worked for Epstein, be it the sort of underlings like Sarah Kellen or Leslie Groff or Natalia Malyshev, or down the line to housekeepers, butlers, and assistants and various associates, they were coached on not to answer questions if ever asked. Most of them signed non-disclosure agreements. This was sort of the norm when you entered into that world and you started working for him. They were all, told to, if you're being forced to give a deposition, to plead the fifth, plead the fifth no matter what. So the fact that the pilot did speak, leads me to believe that, Epstein kind of gave his blessing or his hands were tied, that he had to. Now, as Jane Doe 43 describes in the criminal complaint, these underlings and unnamed co-conspirators wittingly and unwittingly, they performed, their functions as employees to ensure that the enterprise supplied young females to Epstein and others for sexual purposes. What we're saying there is that essentially anybody that worked for Epstein in any capacity, their real job was in maintaining this sexual trafficking enterprise, which is important that distinction is made, that pretty much anybody that came into contact within Epstein's inner circle or that worked for Epstein in any capacity was essential to maintaining that this enterprise continued and that the constant flow of, quote, young females continued to Epstein. Now, why am I making such a big deal about that? Again, because Epstein does trickle out to a lot of other people. Now, that's not to say that anybody that ever came in contact with Epstein was, part of this sexual trafficking enterprise, but the people that were working directly with him were, whether they were witting or unwitting in this, they had to have known and that they were helping in some way. So very important there. Jane Doe 43 goes on to say in the complaint that Epstein and company recruited and procured hundreds of girls over the decades. That these recruitments and procurements included the use of fraud, coercion, the threat of coercion, and a combination of the three. And again, that they targeted underprivileged, emotionally vulnerable, and or economically disadvantaged young females. This is also kind of an interesting aspect of this, and I want to kind of cover that a little bit later on, maybe in the second hour. But what I find really fascinating about this new case is that it is a different look into how Epstein operated, because I think there's been this sort of disconnect that a lot of people have been kind of just putting it out there again that Epstein is part of this large dark cabal You know, where there's just sort of buying and selling children and transporting them, and they've, you know, they've got these, like, I don't know, like child sex farms or something. This is a very average sex offender. This is not, it doesn't have to all be dark, satanic child sacrifice. This is, he is, you know, from this complaint, from what we're seeing with this Jane Doe 43, this is kind of textbook stuff. He targeted girls and young women as well. I mean, you know, it's, you know, just because they're 25 doesn't mean that they weren't, you know, being destroyed. Their lives weren't being destroyed. And he targeted them, you know, like a lot of pedophiles do. Underprivileged, emotionally vulnerable, problems with money, lack of money. This is all very average kind of stuff. I think it's important to that because it demystifies this sick individual. Now, let's get a little bit into some of the other people that are named. I think everyone should be fairly familiar with Ghislaine Maxwell. So I don't want to spend too much time on her, really, because these other characters, particularly Sarah Kellen, are very interesting. But let's just read again from – this is from the criminal complaint. And this is a section where Jane Doe 43 is, you know, describing the people that are also – excuse me – that are also named in this criminal complaint. So it says, quote, defendant Maxwell was for decades the highest-ranking employee of the defendant's sex trafficking enterprise. She herself recruited young females, oversaw and trained other recruiters on how best to recruit girls for sex, developed and executed schemes designed to recruit young females, and ensured that all participants of the defendant's sex trafficking scheme acted in certain specific ways in order to advance the purposes of the scheme and conceal it from law enforcement. Now, I think we kind of all knew that essentially. But again, it's always good to kind of, you know, reinforce this. Again, Maxwell is Epstein's right-hand man, right-hand woman. And she, again, was in, you know, instrumental in overseeing all of this. And she was essentially, you know, she was only answerable to Epstein. Now, goes on to talk about Sarah Kellen. And, says, quote, defendant Kellen recruited young females and maintained Epstein's sex schedule in order to ensure that he was not without the sexual favors of young females for any extended period of time. Defendant Kellen also handled travel arrangements for the various females being exploited for sexual purposes. Defendant Kellen reported directly up the enterprise's line of authority to Defendant Maxwell. Again, people that have followed this case closely will know of Sarah Kellen, or Sarah Kensington, as she's now called. And she appears on, you know, almost every one of the flight manifests. She, you know, she was always flying with Epstein. So again, it makes sense that, you know, she was handling travel arrangements for all of this. Sarah Kellen is also referred to, again, by Larry Viskosky. I got to get that name right at some point. He refers to Sarah Kellen as, again, the one that's sort of figuring out, calling him when to pick him up, when to fly here, where they're flying, how many people are coming, all that sort of stuff. So, again, Sarah Kellen fairly high up in the sort of scheme of all of this stuff. And just a quick little kind of background on her. There's a interesting article that was in The Guardian about Sarah Kellen and Nadia Marchenkova, who now goes by Nadia Marchenko. Again, I've spoken about both of these individuals in the past because there are, you know, there's pictures of them are online. Nadia Marchenkova is an airline pilot, or she's a pilot. She used to run a flight school in New York that gave sort of discounted pilot's lessons. Now she seems to basically sell I can't remember what the name of them are, but the little things that are on the shoulders of like a pilot's shirt, those like colorful stripe things. That's what she now seems to kind of sell those through her company was called Aviloop, doesn't seem to really exist anymore. If you go to the Aviloop website, if you type in aviloop.com, it reroutes you to this site that sells those shoulder things that pilots have. And she also changed her name to Nadia Marchenko. She was a model as well. She's on cover of Cosmo Girl at one point and a bunch of other fashion magazines. I think she was on, Harper's Bazaar, in Southern Europe or Eastern Europe. I can't remember exactly. Bunch of things. She was a model, but, was also, deeply involved in Epstein stuff. Allegedly, this is the young girl from the Balkans that Epstein is alleged to have bought. I believe that's Nadia Marchenkova. But Sarah Kellen is a bit more of an interesting figure because she changed her name to Sarah Kensington and then went on to marry to become the wife, of NASCAR driver Brian Vickers. She also ran a company called SLK Designs LLC, which doesn't seem to exist anymore. There are other companies that have that name, but they none of which seem to be the one that Sarah Kellen ran. I'm not sure exactly. Important to note too that Sarah Kellen and Nadia Marchenkova's, both of their companies, were registered, when they registered, the address that they gave was 301 East 66th Street. That is an apartment building that is either partially or entirely owned by Mark Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein's brother. And we'll return to that particular building. But very interesting, they both maintain offices there. Again, while they were trying to give off the impression that they were not involved in any of this sort of stuff. And Mark Epstein has been very hush-hush about his brother. A character that nobody talks about or nobody covers at all or anything like that. But, Mark Epstein is this real estate guy. Raises lots of questions about real estate law and what's going on. And, I know Mark Epstein he's the guy that had confirmed that Donald Trump did fly on Epstein's plane. Again, another real estate mogul. So very, very fascinating there. It is known too. Let me say, it's known in the NASCAR community who Sarah Kensington really is. Now there are pictures of them. You can Google pictures of the two of them and they look like this wonderful couple. I don't know what is going through Brian Vickers' head. If you type in Sarah Kellen, into Google, you're going to find these articles. You're going to find pictures of her with Nadia Marchenkova. You're going to find pictures of Sarah Kellen with another one of these girls or victims of Epstein's, Cindy Lopez, at the all sorts of different functions and things like that. And she's named. She's named in some of these earlier legal proceedings. She pled the fifth when asked about anything related to Epstein. Yet this guy married her. I don't know what is going on. And as I said, it's known in the NASCAR community who she is. If you search around on forums and things, either NASCAR or sports forums, people bring it up. On articles discussing them getting married, people bring it up. People are wondering, what is going on? Is this the same woman? Yes, it is. And again, obviously she's fairly, not well hidden, but, cause there's not a lot out there on her. You marry an athlete or a sports figure, you're going to get your picture taken. You're going to be, you're a public figure to a degree, even if you're just the wife of somebody. So, just changing her name from Kellen to Kensington doesn't change who she is and the connections that she has. So, again, and this is someone who has been named and questioned and whatnot, but now she's part of this lawsuit. So that's a big deal. And, again, Kellen seems to be fairly high up in this hierarchical structure, or at least in so far as she was, handling all the travel arrangements, that she was running Epstein's sex schedule. So, you know, again, she's reporting directly to Maxwell. Now, we'll get back to Kellen a little bit later. Going back again from the criminal complaint. Now it says that, defendant Epstein employed many recruiters of young females. The nature of the defendant's sex trafficking scheme enabled victims themselves, such as defendant Malyashev, to elevate their status to that of a paid recruiter of other victims. Recruiters were taught by defendants Epstein and Maxwell to inform targeted victims that Epstein possessed extraordinary wealth, power, resources, and influence, that he was a philanthropist who could help female victims advance their careers and lives, and that the recruits needed only to provide Epstein with body massages in order to avail themselves of his financial assistance and influence. In fact, however, these representations were fraudulent. The vast majority of girls were required to perform intimate sexual acts at the defendant's direction, and the defendants did not help or intend to help advance the victims' careers. So now we've got, we sort of know who Natalia Malyashev is. This is a victim. This is someone that was, coerced into this lifestyle or this world, and was able to elevate herself to become a paid recruiter. So now she's going out and finding people such as Jane Doe 43. Now I bring this up because, that's another distinction that we need to make when we're getting into this sort of stuff. And this is why people need to kind of understand the gravity and the magnitude of a case like this. They need to understand what's really going on here. Because it's very easy to paint this all in black and white terms. You know, the way that many in the alternative media have been kind of going after, the whole pedo conspiracy and whatnot. Everything is very black and white. Now, I'm not trying to defend any of these people, but you've got a victim here, you know? Now, that doesn't excuse what Malyashev did. You know, it doesn't excuse the fact that she recruited girls, that she may still be recruiting girls for Epstein, that she's being paid for this. But we need to understand that, you know, most people, okay, with the exception of, you know, your Jeffrey Epsteins, your Ghislaine Maxwells, and others, most young women don't grow up and decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be a pedophile recruiter for this billionaire psychopath. Nobody really grows up wanting to do that. Nobody grows up thinking this is the job career path that I'm going to take. Okay? These are damaged people. That doesn't excuse what Malyashev did, but it provides an explanation, I think. And it also shows that, you know, there are no true bad guys and good guys. Like, you know, I mean, obviously Epstein and Maxwell are hideous individuals. They are bad guys. I really can't think of, I mean, you know, I'm sure if this became, you know, a real public trial, Epstein would throw I was molested. I was this, I was that, I was the other thing. Okay. But, you know, I don't really buy any of that to begin with. I wouldn't, rather. But when you really start breaking this down, it's much more complicated. Nothing is so easy as black and white. There are lots of shades of gray, especially when you're dealing with something like this. If you look at pictures of some of these girls, like Kellen, Nadia Marchenkova, Cindy Lopez and stuff, these are young women. Okay, some of these pictures, I mean, God only knows. You look at Virginia Roberts, or Virginia Guafiri, she's like, 14 years old. Your mind is not developed. When you enter into this horrific world and you're subjected to these sort of horrible things, I mean, this is like classic brainwashing. You know, I mean, this is how pimps work. This is how pimps convince girls and women and men that, you know, this is your life. This is what you're going to do. You're going to go out. You're going to work for me. You're going to get other people. You become acclimated to this. This becomes normalized. And in a lot of cases, you know, especially the sort of, pimp prostitute relationship, they genuinely come to believe that the pimp is protecting them. That their abuser is the only one that is protecting them from the evils of the outside world. You know, this is the sort of cult leader mentality again. So I just kind of want to bring that up. I know I'm kind of getting a little bit off base there, but we need to kind of understand that there's something a lot scarier. Again, Jane Doe 43 is naming, you know, she's going after, Nadia Malyashev in this. Natalia Malyashev, excuse me. She's not saying, oh, you know, I'm just going to excuse it. You know, whatever. She's going after her, but she is admitting that, you know, she was a victim that became elevated. You know, there's room to move in this business. So just to keep that in mind, you know, and again, too, because, you know, it's like we shouldn't, don't go after these people. Don't go attacking them. You know, don't start trolling, these people. You don't know what really happened. Okay. You don't know what's really going on. There is more to this. Now, that's not to say that, you know, I would love to see these people in trial. I would love to see them be put behind bars. But we should understand. We should have the capacity to understand that there's more to this. Now, let's moving on to another person that's named in this. Defendant Groff, we're referring to Leslie Groff, coordinated schedules between Defendant Epstein and the various young females used for sex, made travel arrangements for the girls, tended to their living needs, and communicated with them in order to maintain their compliance with the rules of behavior imposed upon them by the enterprise. Defendant Groff coordinated schedules between Defendant Epstein and the various young females used for sex, made travel arrangements for the girls, tended to their – oh, I'm just repeating myself. I'm sorry. I think I copy and pasted the same thing over. So now we've got Leslie Groff, who, from what I can tell, I did a little bit of digging because that name sounded familiar to me in relation to this. She's believed to have been one of Epstein's personal assistants, or at least that's, you know, on paper that's what it was. But she appears to be the sort of go-between in terms of the girls and Epstein himself. So we've got Sarah Kellen – is doing Epstein schedules, essentially. You know, she's keeping a list of, okay, this girl this day and then this one on Tuesday and whatever. And she's arranged, you know, she's figuring out the flight schedule for Epstein himself. Whereas Groff is dealing with the travel arrangements for the girls, who I'll add too, were not always on, his jet. Jane Doe 43 says that there were times where she was just given a ticket and told to go somewhere. You know, so again, also important, you know, the image is that this is all within, you know, the confines of his plane, not always. Which, you know, raises all sorts of other questions too. How young were some of, you know, if you get a 13-year-old girl traveling alone on a plane, you know, that should raise some questions. The same way it should raise questions if they're getting on Epstein's plane. But Groff also, again, was setting up housing for them. I assume she was probably also providing them with whatever money or compensation, cell phones, things like that. And, you know, again, this is why I'm really fascinated by, and I wanted to talk about this, because now we're really kind of starting to get more of an inside look into this criminal enterprise. Which is not to say that we weren't before, but I think it was very easy for people to kind of get bogged down in the, oh, with Prince Andrew and Alan Dershowitz and Bill Clinton and all these other famous rich people are involved, and it's a cult, Illuminati sex parties and stuff on his island, and there's a whole thing with the temple down on the island, which is very bizarre. Whereas, again, Now we're kind of getting into, here are some of the people. Here are the key players. This is how the Enterprise operated. These are the basics. I think that's really important too. Again, it demystifies this sick fuck. You know, he's not this omnipotent Illuminati priestess, okay? He's just he's no better than just a run-of-the-mill pedophile. He just happens to have more money, you know? But there's nothing special about this guy. And it's also, again, it's important to understand how these criminal enterprises work if you want to kind of, you know, again, make a case against them, which is very much so what is going on in Jane Doe 43's criminal complaint. Now, getting back more to some of the revelations and whatnot that are named in this complaint, Jane Doe 43 says that, you know, in spite of appearances, Epstein and Maxwell never gave up their trafficking enterprise. You know, she says again there was this sort of appearance that, you know, when Epstein got caught initially, back in, you know, what was like 2005 or so, that, you know, this was all sort of done and gone with and it all stopped. And she said that it, far from it, that instead what was going on, according to Jane Doe 43, was that the style changed. And this is another very important part that, again, is not, I don't think, has been fully understood or explored. She says, Jane Doe 43 says that the style changed from targeting Palm Beach high school girls, okay, to transporting girls from other places in the U.S. and abroad and brought them primarily and exclusively to his New York mansion and to the Virgin Islands, to his island in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Now, why is this important? Why should we take note of this? Because I'm assuming that this guy was doing it whatever, you know, that you know, if he was in New York and he wanted something, he could arrange for a girl to come or what, you know, something, okay? But the way that Jane Doe 43 talks about, or the way that I'm, at least that I've sort of interpreted this, and I might be totally wrong, was that this was a thing that was almost, you know, for at least for some period of time, was like exclusive to Palm Beach. That this was going on, you know, that this was more of like a Palm Beach thing, that he went down to Palm Beach to kind of do this. Now, I don't think that that's quite what's being said, because again, she also says that, you know, he was having sex every day. Numerous stories, you know, it's definitely people coming in and out, but, you know, in New York, many, and when you see, you know, you can look up the Daily Mail used to have a photographer out there. They get these pictures. They're of age for sure, or they definitely look like they're of age. So again, he's having sex, his preference up to 25 years, right? So maybe New York, it was all quote unquote legal. Okay, they're of age. Now, who knows if they were, you know, consenting to this, if they were being coerced into having sex, were these, you know, God only knows what. Now, but was the illegal stuff, was that primarily down in Palm Beach? Maybe, I don't know. But, you know, it's important to say, and again, targeting high school girls. And that's another aspect of this that didn't get enough play. Or enough attention on. You know, he was targeting high school girls from, you know, the poorer sections of the Palm Beach area. Okay, not obviously not, you know, from rich, you know, the sort of rich private schools and stuff in Palm Beach. You know, they're, you know, not necessarily terrible schools, but they're poor schools, they're poorer people. You know, that's who he's targeting. And it's in, you know, a lot of numbers. And then it sort of switches to moving, transporting girls from other places in the U.S. and abroad. Okay? So important to kind of, you know, keep that in mind. It also says, again, that, you know, Epstein and Maxwell developed a sophisticated system to insulate themselves from criminal and civil liability. So, again, this is what I said before, and this is what Jane Doe 43 is talking about. Confidentiality agreements, do not speak to law enforcement, notify Epstein if they are approached by law enforcement, use his attorneys exclusively, invoke the Fifth, and also, very importantly, destroy evidence and lie about it. She said that that was, you know, one of the sort of things that they were essentially, you know, told to do or coached to do, taught to do, rather. Now, the plaintiff, Jane Doe 43, alleges that in 2005, Epstein and co-conspirators, when they became aware that law enforcement was about to execute a search warrant, this is in the Palm Beach mansion, that they removed computer systems that logged information, such as identities of witnesses, nude photos. They got rid of massage pads, scheduling books, vibrators, and other sex toys that would have been incriminating. So again, this is something that I think it's something that we many people assumed, you know, that either that it was destroyed or that whatever was on there, you know, that they did find, that they used, but they sealed it. But it's important to know that she's saying that they were destroying evidence. You know, that I mean, you know, again, that's a very big crime, especially, you know, if they're destroying things like identities of these people, nude photos and things. Now, specifically to Jane Doe 43, she says that all of this started approximately October 2006 to April 2007. Very important dates, because that is like in the middle of all of this crazy shit with him. Okay? This is like, you know, the investigation begins sometime around late 2005, I want to say. I don't know, right in front of me. And then, of course, Epstein would later, you know, plead guilty to underage solicitation in 2008. So this is in the middle of that. Again, important because, you know, this guy is, I mean, it's like a compulsion. He cannot stop. You know, this is not, he's not, and again, it's while he's negotiating these things, while he's maintaining that, you know, I'm not doing it in Palm Beach, I'm not doing it anywhere, I've cleaned up my act. Again, you know, maybe this is in part how he's able to convince all of his celebrity friends, oh, it's not a big deal, let's all have a party when I get out of the joint, all right, in New York. In the middle of this, he's doing this. He's recruited Jane Doe 43. Okay. Now, again, she says that she was recruited under the guise that her admission to college and her expenses would be paid for. She's approached by defendant Malyashev, who describes Epstein as a wealthy philanthropist who frequently uses his wealth and influence to help financially poor individuals like Jane Doe 43. Malyashev reports to her superiors, Kellen, Groth, and Maxwell, and was paid. You know, again, very important. I think it's important to, in a legal sense, again, that, you know, that in itself is where, you know, not only are you recruiting, you're being paid, you know, this is, and I think it also helps that they can show, you know, this is wire transfer, you know, so that's important, I think, on a, you know, and again, in kind of nailing these people, you know, again, if this comes to a trial or something like that, and Jane Doe 43 says, well, I was approached by Malyashev on such and such a day, and they try, you know, and then, you know, 2 days later, Malyashev gets whatever, $5,000 or something deposited into a bank account. You know, you're starting to really kind of piece this stuff together. Now, says that Malyashev then introduced Jane Doe 43 to Epstein, who confirmed that he could get her into FIT. And on top of that, Maxwell, Kellen, and Groff also confirmed this many times over to her. Okay? So what's going on there? They're beginning the kind of initial induction into this. You know, they're now, because, you know, it's one thing, you know, Malyashev meets her at a club or something, right? Or at a maybe at a you know, an open casting call for a modeling agency. Befriends her, you know, they go out to get a drink or a coffee or something like that. You know, it's one thing for Malyashev to say this, you know, because again, I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of models out there that have heard this sort of story before. This is nothing new. But now you've got Sarah Kellen saying this. You've got Leslie Groff saying this. You've got Ghislaine Maxwell saying this. Again, all women. You know, very, you know, there's this innate idea, oh, well, you know, woman wouldn't do this to another woman, you know? But now you've got all these women, and it's totally fine. This is a, you know, he's a great guy. And again, they're probably Googling him, and they're seeing he's at all, you know, he gives money to all these science foundations. He's seen with all sorts of celebrities, Donald Trump, Bill Clinton, very wealthy, the Cherokee family, very, very, very wealthy. David Gergen, he's at MIT, he's at Harvard, he's doing all these things. And they're saying he's going to help you. Look, he's helping all these other things. You know, people, it's gone down the memory hole, or people don't care to look, but Epstein had all sorts of weird company. He had the Jeffrey Epstein Education Fund, and the, you know, he's building schools down in the Virgin Islands, and he was a part of the Edge Foundation, and he's part of this thing and that and the other. He's spreading money all over. So it makes sense. You know, this all seems to be normal, or as normal as you can get in this. And again, I think it's very easy for you know, young girl or woman or man or, you know, boy or anything, you can get caught up in this really quickly. You know, when you think you're going to get all these things, you can begin to convince yourself that this is okay, that giving a body massage to this guy is fine. Maxwell tells her she will have to give a body massage in exchange. Now, almost instantly, this first massage converts into a sexual act, and Epstein makes it very clear that this is how it's going to be. She then, you know, and again, and Maxwell and Epstein threaten that not that they, yeah, of course, they have the ability to make her, you know, a star. They also have the ability to make sure that she would never go to college or get a modeling agency or any contacts if she did not provide sexual favors and abide by the instructions of Maxwell and Epstein. So, and I assume this is probably instantly, you know, afterwards. And then she says, dozens more body massages in the New York townhouse and on his private island occurred with Jane Doe 43 specifically, and each time a sex act had to be performed. And she also, you know, makes note that Maxwell controlled the rotation of girls and sex acts, and even forced, you know, some of these people to, you know, these women and girls to have sex with one another as well. Jane Doe 43 also says constant verbal abuse and threats from Epstein, Maxwell, and Kellen. This sounds horrifying. On one occasion, Jane Doe 43 tried to escape. She was on the island down in Little St. James and attempted to escape and was then caught by, you know, Epstein and his goons, I assume, that he keeps down there. And again, all these sorts of threats. You know, we're going to destroy you. You're never going to go to school, blah, blah, blah. All of these sort of things again. And all the while hanging this over her head that you're going to get into college. This is going to happen. We're going to pay for it. You're going to be a model. And I think it's, you know, you can begin to convince yourself that this is okay. This, you know, it's all going to pay off. It's all going to pay off. Now, she also says that she was provided with living quarters at 301 East 66th Street. This is the building owned by Mark Epstein, where Sarah Kellen and Nadia Marchenkova's companies are registered to. So now we've got her living in this building. And there are all sorts of allegations. MC2 is a modeling agency, very big, fairly wealthy modeling agency. They've got their offices are in New York, Miami, and Tel Aviv. It's owned by Jean-Luc Brunel on paper, but is believed to have been bankrolled by Jeffrey Epstein. And that a lot of the MC2 models were being housed in 301 East 66th Street. You know, modeling agency, you know, does this sound familiar to Donald Trump at all? You know, and any questions about that modeling agency? Again, these are, you know, there's a reason these sort of guys are getting involved in that sort of a profession. And you know, this is not to say that, you know, to any listeners that want to become models or anything like that. Oh, well, here we are. We're at the break. We will continue in the second hour a bunch more on this and as well as on the other cases. So join me then. Mm-hmm.
like very much.
Radio. You're an American institution. American Freedom Radio.
Are you feeling embarrassed and stuck because you can't focus or concentrate? I have a confession to make. I spent years unable to think clearly, like I was in a fog. I was going through the motions, running my companies, and I hated feeling groggy and mentally sluggish. I couldn't get ahead like this. It's no secret, the powers that be want us dumbed down. Chemicals, fluoride, our brains are under siege, and we are experiencing lower IQs. But now there's a weapon to fight back and win. Introducing DNA Evolve, a revolutionary breakthrough in a category of cognitive enhancers called nootropics. I've been using DNA Evolve and couldn't feel better. For me, it works. It feels great to get things done again and get ahead. Try a free sample for yourself at DNAEvolveSample.com. That's DNAEvolveSample.com. Supplies are limited, so go to DNAEvolveSample.com right now.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Sensen, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
What about show business? Show business, completely dishonest, corrupt, and full of shit, but in a nice way. Plenty of expensive drugs and perverted sex. You're going to be full of shit. Might as well enjoy your work. Then you have the media, not just the news media, let's include them all. The media are almost literally exploding with bullshit because they're located right at the crossroads of all the other bullshit. The media are made up of equal parts advertising, politics, business, public relations, and show business. These people are sitting right at bullshit junction. There's enough bullshit in the media for Texas to open a branch office. And you still have enough left over to start 2 law firms and a Christian bookstore.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Provide us for free education?
Well, that's obviously effective, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does.
Or they never censor, hang up, or cut off their guests?
Well, that's not fun, is it?
Well, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shills and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative, mainstream, and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics,
no taboo topics,
no fear of doom,
no fear of doom.
We are American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.
Hawkins Policy Radio, offering a unique perspective on everything. Geopolitics, culture creation, the reality of the world we live in. Coming to
you live from New York City. Your host, Pierce Redman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Porkins Policy Radio. Thank you for joining me here in the second hour. If you've just joined us, I have been talking about the most recent lawsuit against Jeffrey Epstein and as well as Ghislaine Maxwell, Sarah Kellen, Leslie Groff, and Natalia Malyashev. This has been a lawsuit that was filed by Jane Doe 43, and of course she is being represented by David Boies and his law firm. So this is a pretty big deal. Now, in the just before the break, we were kind of went off again on a little tangent, talking about modeling and stuff. But just for talking about again, MC2 modeling, you can look that up. They're pretty well known. They're owned by Jean-Luc Brunel, who is a close confidant and friend of Epstein's. Definitely involved in, I think, the like overseas trafficking of girls and things. And you know, he visited Epstein every single day that he was in prison, I think, including at least once or twice. He visited him like twice a day. And there are rumors and allegations, of course, that Epstein is the one that fronted the money to set up MC2 modeling. I just sort of brought that up again as a Donald Trump's modeling agency. There's all sorts of weird things going on with that. And it's a pattern. You know, this is something that these people, kind of do. You know, that's why some people at least get involved in modeling. But, we're also talking again about Jane Doe 43. We're talking about, her sort of early stages into all of this. And what was happening with her? How, you know, she's again having sex with Epstein. They're threatening her. You know, you'll never work. You'll never go to school. Blah blah blah. Again, this is also, you know, she's from South Africa. Okay, so she's not American. She's not from New York. You know, this is a foreign country. You know, it is kind of like, if you don't make it as a model when you're young, it's not like, you know, when you're, I don't know, 30, you're just going to become a model all of a sudden. And these people are also, I mean, you have to assume again too, this young woman is looking around her at the level of power and money and influence that this guy has. And I mean, what would you do? You know? And I'm sure, you know, again, that the implicit threats here also is like, you know, we can destroy you. You know, it's not just that you're not going to go to college. I mean, you know, we can do whatever we want. So again, keep that in mind. Now, January 2007, Jane Doe 43 is sent to South Africa to recruit for a fee one or more aspiring models to become Epstein's quote assistant. And of course, Jane Doe 43 says that, you know, she was not really going to be an assistant. That was not, you know, what was going on. And this is exactly, what had happened to her. So, you know, here we go again. This is the Natalia Malyashev, a victim who is now being told or asked to go out and start recruiting other girls and you'll get paid for it. And who knows, maybe you do that enough and you can kind of, I don't know, buy your freedom from Epstein. You know, I don't know. I suspect that's not what happened with Sarah Kellen, but it's totally possible that it was. You know, that she worked her way up high, you know, long enough and she was able to, you know, go from being one of Epstein's, you know, young victims into, being paid, I assume, fairly well. To, you know, be his sex scheduler and, you know, travel assistant. Maybe that, you know, so again, I wanted to bring that up only in that we shouldn't paint all of these people as this sort of evil monsters that we need to, you know, hang out, you know, in the village square or something. Jane Doe 43, could have easily just become another recruiter, you know? Say goodbye to that. I'm going to get paid, whatever. You know, and just sort of shut down and, you know, close her eyes to anything that's going around her. And while she was in South Africa, she was also forced or pressured intensely to lose about 11 pounds, or she wouldn't be able to return. And she says she goes on this crash diet, screws up her kidneys. She's under an intense psychological strain at this point. They call her parents while she's in South Africa to reassure them that she would get into FIT. So now we've got Epstein calling her parents. How does he get the numbers? You know, maybe Jane Doe 43 gives them to him, but maybe not. Maybe he just finds them. And now it's like, you know, you put yourself in her shoes. You've been doing these horrible things with this sick, sick, nasty person. Now he's calling your parents to reassure them you're going to get into FIT. Again, this is a threat. This is an implicit threat. You got your parents, okay? We can contact them. And people will remember that in Epstein's black book, his addresses and whatnot, he had lots of numbers of mothers of, you know, that were the mothers of girls that were giving him massages. So, again, he's keeping tabs on all these sort of things. Now, Jane Doe 43 refuses to find a recruit, and you know, she doesn't want to do this. Again, there's more threats and stuff. And on May 2007, Jane Doe 43 leaves the U.S. and does not return. And that's sort of where we are. And then now we're here, and now she's filing this case. So that's essentially what's in the criminal complaint. I encourage you to go through it, look at it yourself. I'll, of course, keep everybody updated on anything. As of right now, I don't think there's been no motions or anything has been filed. You know, they've filed summonses for Maxwell and Kellen, Groff, Malyashev, and Epstein, but there's nothing else that's really been going on since then. But let's break down a little bit this case, and then we'll get on to the defamation case as well, I think. But I think this case actually has some real legs on it, okay? There's something, this could really kind of go somewhere. A, we've got Boies Schiller Flexner, okay? We've got David Boies personally involved in this. This guy is not, he's not doing this for the money. B, he's not doing this for the publicity. This guy is already world famous. There's nothing, you know. So, and he is a type of lawyer that's not going to put his name on the line for something like this. He's not just doing this for no reason. This is a guy who you have to assume he thinks he can win this, or he can at least get something out of them for this. And you know, this is a big guy. There's a lot of people out there when you bring this stuff up. Again, you know, you got to do it kind of tactfully because you can also sound crazy when you start throwing all this stuff about Epstein out there. But there's people that will say, oh, well, it's just this, it's not serious, blah, blah, blah. You give them David Boies' name. That's serious, okay? That's relatable to people. People will know who he is. You know, it lends some serious weight. That's one thing. But more importantly, I think, is it's a new angle. It's a new angle. It's a new victim. There's even some new kind of perpetrators. And it's going after Epstein. Okay? It's important to go after some of these, you know, people like Maxwell. And I think the Guaffieri lawsuit is a great thing, because she could actually win that. But going after Epstein, that's different. That's big. You know, he's not just named in the lawsuit or, you know, an intervener or whatever. This is going after him directly. And this can start drudging up all of the shady stuff that was going on. Oh, excuse me. Oh, nothing like burping on live radio. This can start dredging up a lot of the shady stuff that was going on back in Palm Beach. Again, between the government and Epstein. I'm a proponent to or a believer in that at some point, Epstein is just, he can't win all of these. Okay? At some point, something is gonna happen. You know, if real lawsuits keep happening, if people are really kind of pursuing this, and they're pursuing this in a way that's tangible, that can actually, you know, go somewhere, he's fucked. Okay? He can't sort of get out of this forever. Again, he's already a social pariah. Nobody wants to, you know, be seen with this guy or associated with this guy. So he's lost his mystique. Whereas again, in 2008, he kind of, it was okay. He had all, you know, everybody was going to his house. He told the New York Post, I'm not a sex offender. I didn't do anything worse than steal a bagel. Direct quote from this, guy. That's not the case anymore. If we keep kind of hitting him smart, in a smart way, really going after it, he's gonna fold at some point. You know, he's not impenetrable. And you put enough pressure on some of these people, you start offering them things, you know, somebody's gonna rat this guy out, okay? Somebody's gonna sell him out. That's my hope. Maybe that's very optimistic. New angle too. This isn't, this isn't about the global sex trafficking Illuminati pedo rings, okay? This is a very specific sort of a case or a specific crime that they are alleging here. Again, reading from, you know, from the count that's in this thing, they're going, let me find it. Defendants individually and together within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States in interstate and foreign commerce and or affecting interstate and foreign commerce knowingly recruited, enticed, harbored, transported, provided, maintained, patronized, socialized, threatened, forced, and coerced plaintiff to engage in commercial sex acts. This is different, and again, the parameters of this case are different as well. This isn't about Epstein procuring high school girls. This isn't about Epstein shipping in girls from France, as Jean-Luc Brunel is alleged to have done. This isn't about Epstein buying. Those are important and should be pursued as much as they possibly can. But what do we have here is, I think, a much more tangible case to be won. We're talking about a girl who may have been of age, okay? She could have been 17, 18 years old. And again, this is over the course of about a year, so she might have been, you know, turned 18, turned 19, I don't know. This isn't, you know, so it's not a, this is very different. This is also him promising her college. That's it. Fairly simple. Yet, the implicit idea here is that this was never going to happen. So, you know, we're also talking about fraud. We're talking about fraud here. We're talking about coercion. We're talking about, you know, this is a different angle. So that's important as well. And I think we're also getting a deeper look into Epstein's operation. This isn't just, about the horrible things that were going on in the plane and on the island. Now we're kind of getting, I keep saying this, I keep using this term demystifying. I think that's why this is an important case to follow as well. This isn't about this sort of, you know, massive conspiracies involving the military-industrial complex and foundations and orphanages and you know, all of the stuff that certain people who shall remain nameless have been talking about and making videos of on YouTube. This is very basic stuff, okay? This is a guy with a disgusting compulsion and desire to fulfill these horrible illegal sexual desires on a day-to-day basis, and this is how he does it, okay? This is one of the methods, I should say. This is one of the methods, but I think it's probably the easiest one. You know, this is a lot easier than having Jean-Luc Brunel ship, you know, transport, 20 children over to Palm Beach or down to the Virgin Islands and using, somehow he's getting American passports for all these girls and then sending them back the next day. That's important, and that is going on and should be investigated, but this is much more the just kind of nonchalant everyday attitude of it. This is how all pedophiles do this. This isn't about, you know, this is like the normal behavior. You find a girl who's insecure about herself, who is maybe from the wrong side of the tracks, you know, doesn't have a lot of money, underprivileged, emotionally vulnerable, all these sort of things, and you entice them with, you know, it's not like, here, I'm going to give you $1 million if you do this. It's, I'll help you get into college. I'll help provide for your family. You know, not those are little things, but those are tangible, easy things. They're not like these game changers, like I'm going to make you, you know, I don't know, the most famous supermodel on the planet. So that's important here. We're getting a deeper look into this. We're starting to now be able to piece together, okay, this is what Sarah Kalin did. Okay, so now let's start looking into that. Let's look into Leslie Groff. So she's arranging the, you know, lodgings and things like that. It also, you know, she also Jane Doe 43 says she was also, you know, she's given a cell phone and other things like that from Leslie Groff. So we're starting to now kind of again put names to these people. It's not this shadowy dark cabal where the CIA and Mossad and stuff, and you know, I think that in some ways is like disappointing to some. They want this to be this sort of great, you know, crazy thing, but this is real. Okay, these are real people. These are this is not necessarily I think personally this should be scarier to people. Or, you know, they should take this more seriously, that it's not this crazy dark cabal, that it's fairly normal and open in your face. You know? How many of these recruiters does Epstein have, not in New York, but all over? Now, you know, does he have them in every single place he owns a property? I would assume so. So he's got a network of, recruiters in London, in Paris. Maybe down in the Virgin Islands, in New York, out in New Mexico, where he's got the big ranch, you know. And they're not. It can be fairly straightforward. I think it's also important to point out too that it's not all like children. That is a horrible aspect of this. But there are also, you know, that you can be an adult and be a victim of this as well. You know, you don't have, it doesn't have to be that you're just some little kid. Obviously, I think that's, you know, none of this is like better or worse. You know, no one is like, oh, well, I wish I was 13 when it happened, or oh, I wish I was 25 when it, you know, it's horrible around. But this doesn't, the sexual exploitation, sexual trafficking, those sorts of things, they happen to adults. They happen to people that, you know, are totally, not normal, but you know, high functioning, and their, you know, their brain capacity is as big as it's going to be. You know, it's not like a kid where you can kind of really, you know, it happens to people who can quote consent to it. Another thing to kind of, you know, keep in mind as well with all of this, it's not, there's more to this whole story, and again, I think there's more to what Epstein was involved with. It's not you know, all children and things like that. I think in, you know, a lot of ways it's the dangers of being a model. you know, quite simple to get wrapped up into this sort of world. So that's why I think all of this is sort of important. And I think it's important to understand that, again, you know, and I've said this before on the show. I said it with Chuck Ocelli in times like that. It's not all dark, scary, shadowy networks and things. It's the guy next door. It's, you know, your neighborhood friend, your family member, a teacher, and a wealthy billionaire. But it can be very simple, as it can be as simple as someone like Malyashev saying, hey, you know, you look like you need some help. I can help you. And it can be fairly benign. And that's important, again, to understanding this and understanding the complexity of the whole issue of sexual trafficking, too. Another thing, too, that I kind of want to point, and then I'll try and get to the defamation suit as well, is that Epstein also kind, you know, oddly enough, at least the appearance of not caring necessarily about the possibility that these girls could just sort of run away. Now, I, and that's not to say that they all had that opportunity. I'm sure some of them didn't have that opportunity. And I think this goes to the power that this guy had, but you know, he lets Jane Doe 43 go to South Africa alone. He sent, when Virginia Roberts escaped, he sent her to Thailand alone to learn massage technique, or, you know, probably to send her to a brothel. But she was alone and she escaped. Same thing. Jane Doe 43, boom, you know, she's just there. All of these, you know, high school kids, I mean, he's just it's just happening. You know, that's the other thing too. It's not all Bill Clinton, and politicians and stuff meeting in, you know, crazy Washington DC sex dungeons and killing children and there's no witnesses. None of that may not be happening, but I think this is much more how it does happen. He gets some girl to come over. He has sex with them. Boom. There you go. You're free to go. You're not free to go, but you know what I mean? It's like, almost as if he's daring them to do something. But I find it really interesting that at least two people that we know of that have accused him of all these stuff were both at one point seemingly let out into the world, and he just assumed either they were going to come back. Okay, they were going to do what he said, and they were going to come back, which I'm sure a lot of his victims did. Again, that's part of this sort of brainwashing that happens to people that are sexually trafficked. Or he truly didn't give a shit because it just didn't matter to them. Fine, maybe they won't come back, but they're not going to say anything. Okay? And look, I mean, Virginia Guaferi, Jane Doe 43, years after they escaped from Epstein – did they actually come forward and try to go after this guy? So I don't know. I think that's another interesting thing to kind of like keep in mind here. Now maybe that's not totally the case. He could have easily had people following them or something like that, but then you would think we probably wouldn't be hearing about them. So again, that's another aspect to this that I think needs to kind of be not necessarily explored, but understood a little bit better, too. I mean, it's not, he just, there you go to Thailand, you know, hope I see you again, almost. But as I said, I think that goes towards the power that this guy had over these victims, that he assumed that they would come back, probably because so many of them have, but also the power that he had that go tell somebody, you know, or knowing that they won't, that they're not going to say anything, that they're so traumatized that they will keep this a secret. And who knows, you know, for every Jane Doe 43 out there, there's probably, you know, 20 victims of Epstein's that won't say anything ever again, that, and he may not even know where they are now. I mean, that's the other thing too. I mean, I don't think this really matters to him. It's not like he has any true affection or caring for any of these girls and women, or else he wouldn't be doing this to them. So that's all, again, very, very fascinating. And it also shows a pattern here too, whereby Epstein let them go, you know, kind of off the leash and, you know, there's something to that there. But I think that's sort of enough on this particular case. As I said, I'll talk about this if we get any developments or anything like that. When I do talk about Epstein, I do like to kind of keep it like, I want to be able to kind of present you with something that's kind of concrete and stuff. Because believe me, there's a ton more different little angles here and stuff that, are worth looking into. Some of them I do look into, some of them I don't look into. But, you know, I'm not going to just say anything on the air about, you know, because there should be, you know, you should be careful about what you're, you know, if you're going to start researching into this stuff. But, you know, you should also be professional about this, because if you're not, then, you know, it's very easy for people to poo-poo it, to think that you're a lunatic, and you should never do that, especially when you're talking about something like the Epstein case. You know, you don't want to give the naysayers any ammunition. But moving on a little bit, there's also, again, the lawsuit that Virginia Guaffieri is involved in, where she is suing the Ghislaine Maxwell, who's the defendant, and Epstein is a respondent in this, okay? As well as, there's an interested party in that lawsuit called Sarah Vickers, which is interesting, and I've seen that name pop up in other things like that, and I don't know if it's, you know, I'm not sure there's any connection or anything like that, but it's interesting. You've got a Sarah Vickers, you've got Sarah Kellen, who's married to Brian Vickers. Might be reading too much into that. It's totally possible, but you know, that's just one thing. I'll also point out too, Nadia Marchenkova, or Nadia Marchenko, as she now goes by, is also named in Guaffieri's defamation suit. She's listed as a miscellaneous party, but she's at least somewhat involved. And there have been some sort of interesting kind of back and forths with that. Now, the last time something was filed in that lawsuit seems to be, and I'm just refreshing to make sure, it seems like it was just yesterday, I think. And now, of course, it's doesn't want to log me back in. But, yeah, I believe it was just yesterday. Was the last time something was filed. And now, of course, I can't tell you about it because I don't have it in front of me. But I'm using Pacer. And, you know, people can check that out if they want. You know, you can get a Pacer account. It makes doing some of this sort of research very easy. But we do have that case is sort of still going on, as I said. It seems to have kind of hit a bit of a wall because, it's sort of like kind of stalled a little bit. Basically, what you have in this case is you've got, Ghislaine Maxwell claiming that she never defamed Virginia Roberts, that she never, you know, said that she, take it back, Virginia Guaffieri is suing Ghislaine Maxwell because she's saying that Maxwell said that none of this is true, that she was never sexually trafficked, blah, 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 that this is, she's making this all up. And of course, you know, and Virginia Guaffieri is, suing her, you know, saying, no, this is all true. This is, you know, by defaming me, you've, you know, all this, you know, psychological damage, that she's, putting other sexually trafficked women at risk because of all of this sort of stuff. The defamation might work because, you know, it's all there. And if people go back and look at some of the things that Guaffieri has said, about the defamation stuff, I gotta try and find the article. I couldn't find it the last time I looked. I gotta look a little bit closer. But, you know, at one point Maxwell seemed to be saying that, I never defamed, like, she basically said something to the effect of, oh yeah, I never said that she was, that, I never said that this wasn't going on, I just said that Virginia Roberts was never a part of it. So again, it's sort of like, so you and Epstein were trafficking these people, you know, like, is that what you're saying? But you just never said that Virginia Roberts was a part of this? So, you know, that's sort of like an interesting admission there. But basically, the two of them both seem to want to get Epstein himself to testify or to give a deposition on all this. And here we go. I just got back the link on Pacer, so I'll just check. Yeah, so, oh wow, here we go. There's something, a bunch of stuff just filed today. some motion. So, you know, again, I'm not going to talk on it. A lot of it looks you know, it's like they want to exclude the expert testimony of such and such a person. So, you know, there's a bunch of different people and on both sides. Some of it seemed like Virginia Roberts wants to exclude information. Then other times it's Maxwell that wants to exclude information. And as I said, they both want Epstein to talk, I guess thinking, you know, that it will corroborate their stories. And I've said before, Maxwell seems to think that Epstein's testimony will clear her name. I don't know what the hell she's smoking to think that. But I think really what she's trying to say that, and she sort of alluded to it in some you know, newspaper interviews and stuff, is that he's got total immunity, that they both do essentially from the stuff down in Florida. So just use that, you know, that he's got nothing to lose, that he can essentially lie in open court because he's protected from on high for all of the horrible things that they did, and, you know, get me out of this. And it seems as if Epstein doesn't want to help Maxwell, but he doesn't want to say anything, in terms of with Guaffieri. So he doesn't want to say anything. And they're both, you know, so Virginia Guaffieri is trying to get Epstein to testify. Ghislaine Maxwell is trying to get Epstein to testify, and he won't say anything. He doesn't want to help out anybody at this point, okay? That's very interesting. Now, I assume really what's going on here is they're both playing the only card that they've got. It's, you know, defamation suits can be very difficult. There's not a lot of people that are, you know, really willing to say much. And if you get Epstein to say something, this, you know, that's a huge deal. So they're kind of trying to get him to say something, I assume. And he doesn't want to do either of that. So they're kind of stuck at a standstill there. Now, there's another sort of bizarre factor in all of this, and that's the insertion of a noted scumbag and troll, Trump troll, and that's Mike Cernovich, who's, you know, I'm not even going to link to him. I don't even want to say his name. He's just a nasty fucking, he looks like a juiced up cokehead when he's going on about, you know, on Periscope about the pedophiles and whatnot. He's inserted himself into this case. He's an intervener in the case, and he's trying to, I guess, unseal the, I think it's, he wants to unseal, I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. He basically wants to unseal all of the sort of motions and filings that Ghislaine Maxwell filed. So he wants to unseal the filings, I guess, that Maxwell has, which I guess lay out why she's not guilty of defamation. Again, Cernovich is a supposed lawyer, although this is all this sort of, you know, evidence that he's just anything but. Yet he's like amazed that files would be sealed, you know. Not that uncommon for files to be sealed, especially in a high-profile case like this. And you can even go all the way back to, you know, some of the original the original case down in Palm Beach. A lot of those files are still sealed. And this was a judge that, you know, didn't like Epstein but didn't want to hurt any rich people involved. So it's not surprising that that they would be sealed. What is surprising from my limited knowledge when it comes to, you know, court proceedings and court documents, are the amount of, like, redacted files. So, for instance, anything, virtually anything from Epstein's side, from Epstein's lawyers, is redacted. Not sealed, okay? You can look at the, you know, right now I'm looking at the a motion from his lawyers at Atterbury, Goldberg, and Weiss down in Palm Beach. And this is the non-party Jeffrey Epstein's response in opposition to motion to compel testimony of Jeffrey Epstein. So this is his motion to say, I can't testify. You scroll down. You get table of contents, introduction. Got the background is on page 2, and then every subsequent thing is blacked out. So we've had something on page 4, blacked out, then page 8, blacked out, page 9. This is just in the table of contents is blacked out, okay? Not until we get down to the conclusion and certificate of service. And as you scroll through this document, we get non-party Jeffrey Epstein by and through undersigned counsel hereby files this response in opposition to defendant Ghislaine Maxwell's motion to compel testimony of Jeffrey Epstein. Defendant's motion to compel should be denied in its entirety. Everything is just black bars. Scroll down pages and pages of just black bars. Nothing here, okay? Until we get all the way down towards the bottom. Conclusion. For all of the foregoing reasons, defendant's motion to compel should be denied in its entirety. Just that one sentence in the conclusion, then the rest of the conclusion is blacked out. Until you get down to the last page, which is the certificate of service, which is just saying, I hereby certify that this is a true and correct copy of the foregoing and was served to all counsel involved, blah, blah, blah. Respectfully submitted Jeffrey Epstein by his attorneys. That's a little bit odd. That's like throughout. There's lots of little things. Mostly when it's related to Epstein, but there's some other things too. Off the top of my head, I'm looking at Maxwell. This is a motion that Maxwell's side. Virginia Guafiri's. Anyway, lots of black bars over stuff. You want to know what the hell is there. But who knows if we'll ever see that. But yeah, there's some stuff from Virginia Guafiri. Tons of blacked out stuff. What's going on there, and Cernovich doesn't seem all that concerned with that kind of shit, He wants to hear what Maxwell said, but not anything else. And it should be noted that this should raise flags that another Trump troll, okay, another one of these nut jobs out there who thinks, the Clintons are the only evil pedophiles in existence, that Trump is the great, orange savior that will cleanse the world of, the homos and the blacks and all the degenerate groups out there, and it'll make America great again, is now inserting himself into this case. In much the same way that the Pizzagate thing, all of these pro-Trump trolls on 4chan getting, front and center of that case. That should raise some alarm bells, I would hope. And even more interesting, is that the Cernovich files all of his motions to, unseal these documents when? Inauguration Day, okay? January 20th. When I assume he was in Washington at whatever, the Deplorable or something like that. So he can't even be bothered to, this attorney, do that. He's also, he's represented by this just fucking equally shady scumbag of a lawyer, Randazzo, who's just like this really kind of nasty, petty, little man. Mark Randazzo, is his name. It says Randazzo on, I don't know why he's Randazzo in Giffords. I assume because Mark Randazzo his career was destroyed. He's bankrupt too. He's broke as far as I can tell. People might know him. He was sort of his famous like First Amendment lawyer, and he did a lot of stuff, fighting against copyright law. He defended lots of small blogs who were getting, sued by big major media outlets. Then, of course, he went on, he was also very involved in, the porn industry and, fighting First Amendment rights and things like that. But he got, deeply involved with Liberty Media, which is a very large porn studio. They mostly do gay porn, but they do straight porn as well. And I'll link up to a really good article in Ars Technica, talking about the rise and fall of this scumbag. But, you know, I think there's a reason that Randazza is involved in this is because he's broke and he needs to kind of make a name for himself. He came out, I mean, just horrible, you know, coercing people, bribing people. He, you know, for all of his First Amendment anti-copyright shit, that didn't seem to stop him from going after anybody that, you know, broke copyright law when it came to Liberty Media and the porn that they were shooting. And he was, you know, doing these really horrible things, you know, basically going after, you know, anyone that viewed one of Liberty Media's videos on, like, you know, like any free porn site. And he was basically, you know, going to start outing these people if they didn't, you know, cough up the money, which is, like, really horrible, you know, because you might also get some, you know, you get some young kid who's closeted or, you know, lives in a conservative household, and suddenly it's, oh, hey, you know, son, you're being sued because you, you know, you were looking up, whatever, you know, fucking S&M, you know, barebacks, whatever. You know, and his response was, well, those, you know, you could call them all thieving little shits. Well, you know, this guy is also a thieving little shit, who just broke and, you know, needs to make a name for himself. So now he's, you know, attempting to get these files returned. Nothing is going to happen, but I think it's important because this is like more interference. This guy is a known Trump, cult member. It's also, Cernovich is, likes to go on the, Stefan Molyneux, the libertarian cult leader, go on his show quite a bit. So, you know, that should sort of, give you a flavor for what kind of degenerate, nasty person this is. But he's inserting himself into this lawsuit again, this is the lawsuit too, where conceivable, if Epstein says something, Trump is going to be named. Okay? Virginia Guaffieri worked for Donald Trump, for Christ's sake. So did her father. So, this should raise eyebrows. This isn't about him, oh, we gotta save Bill Clinton, you know, we gotta go after Bill Clinton, take down those, you know, the filthy Clintons and this and that and the other. Yes, that's a part of this, and it should be exposed. But, guess what? The sitting president right now is close personal friends with Epstein. And Virginia Guaffieri worked for him in Mar-a-Lago, as did her father. So you got this Trump troll inserting himself into this case, filing it on Inauguration Day? There's something else going on here. Now, I'm not saying that Cernovich is, like, you know, part of some grand cabal and that he's being told to do this by Donald Trump, but it should raise some eyebrows that yet another one of these Trump fanatics is inserting himself into a case where Trump is, you know, just on the border, you know, just on the periphery of all of this. You know, he's involved, okay? He's absolutely involved in this. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I think he's been more involved than people are letting on. And again, you know, what happened with the Katie Johnson rape lawsuit? Well, that got nipped in the butt, right? You know, just in time for Donald Trump, just in time for Pizzagate too, you know, all that sort of stuff. So the insertion of this dickhead into this case should also raise some eyebrows. You know, and what's he, what, you know, again, it's like, what's he really trying to get out of this? And it's funny too, if you read his motions, he's talking about, oh, he's, you know, journalism and journalistic integrity and stuff. And he sounds like Donald Trump. He's, I've got such a, you know, 60 million Twitter followers and my Periscope videos are so fucking great and I get a million people watching this. It's like, we get it, okay? You got a small dick and you're an insignificant, nasty little man. Who, you know, needs to constantly be talking about how great he even talks like Trump on his website. He refers to himself in the third person. Like when he writes articles in, you know, it'll say like by Mike Cernovich, it sounds like a press release. You know, if you read his article quote about, this, you know, filing this motion, it sounds like a press release. But anyway, I don't want to get too kind of wrapped up on him, cause he's not even worth it, but important to keep that in mind, okay? There's also a guy, too, that, you know, says that he's been following this case. I can't find anything that he's said of substance or anything on Epstein. Now, he'll talk about Pizzagate until the cows come home, but I haven't seen too much on Epstein, and I suspect that's because, you know, again, the partisan people that want to get involved in these sort of cases, take it Epstein, they love to talk about Bill Clinton, you know, but the second you start to get into the ground of Donald Trump's connection with this guy, never happened, nothing to see here, they just clam up, they don't want to talk anymore about it. So, and I think that's it, because it's like, you know, it's not only, they just don't even want to have to explain it. Now, again, if you pressured them, they would say, oh, well, he cut off all ties with him and this and that. And, you know, really, Epstein's connection to the Clintons goes back way further. And that's more important. But it's like they just, you know, nobody wants to have to defend their hero against, you know, with a pedophile. You don't want to name your hero the, you know, God Emperor who will save us all alongside Epstein. You don't want to have to say, well, he didn't know him that well. Okay. It's really Bill Clinton that knew Epstein well. So that's why they don't want to talk about it. But in terms of that case, I don't know exactly where we're headed with this. I think we're going to see a lot more back and forth stuff. As I said right now, it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of motions, right? You know, there's been a whole mess of you know, today and yesterday, a lot of motions filed by Virginia Guaffieri, in opposition to motions to exclude expert testimony. So basically, you know, you've got the expert testimony of, you know, a doctor, let's say, who specializes in this, or someone who is, you know, any expert, doesn't matter. Could be, you know, there's tons of experts out there. And Maxwell is trying to quash that. They're trying, you know, trying to make sure that they won't, that the testimony of them won't be admitted. And so now, you know, so then Virginia Guaffieri has got to file a motion to, you know, undo the motion to, it's a lot of that, you know, it's a lot of back and forth legal stuff. And as it stands right now, it doesn't seem as if Epstein is going to be deposed anytime soon. Now, that, I don't know. That might change. There, you know, I'd hope so. If for nothing else, then, you know, it would be amazing if he had to go, you know, down to the Southern District and test him. You know, maybe someone might catch a picture of him. You know, we can see what he looks like right now, how he's doing. But it doesn't look like anything is going to be happening on that score. I will keep you posted. I am working on some other angles and stuff like that, but you know, I want to kind of get my ideas together with all of that. I think I'm going to kind of start wrapping it up here. I just want to say again, this is real stuff is happening right now. Okay, this isn't just internet, you know, conspiracy theory things. These are ongoing cases with some very hard hitters. Take this stuff seriously, okay? And be safe. You know, don't. I cover this stuff all the time. When I do cover it, I cover my ass. You know, I'm only saying what I know. I'm going by just court documents right now. I'm not trying to throw in any stuff that I don't know about and things like that. And as I've reiterated numerous times before, don't get sucked into this. Take a break from this. You don't have to spend all of your every waking moment researching pedos and stuff like that. Don't do that. And, you know, and be smart about this stuff too. There's a ton of publicly available information out there. It just, you know, it just takes a little effort to get it. And I mean, there's like really no effort involved in Pacer. You know, get a Pacer account. You can search anything. You can search like any case. You'll find lots of stuff. I mean, there's a ton of stuff on just on that case alone that you can find. But, you know, like I said, be careful, for your own safety, your mental safety, for your physical, you know, all these sort of things. These are not this isn't like petty two-bit criminals here. Okay. But, on that note, I think we will kind of end it there. Like I said, I'll update you if something is breaking or whatever. And again, I encourage, you know, listeners out there, fans of the show, look at these documents too. Cause I'm not going to go through all of these, you know, to be honest. I just don't have that. I don't have the time to do that. And you know, I'm working on other things too. So please, by all means, if you find something interesting, let me know about it. You know, shoot me an email. I never say this, but you can always email me, porkinspolicy@gmail.com. Shoot me an email if you find something interesting on this. You know, I used to do a lot more with listeners. I used to kind of follow the Epstein stuff. Again, if you want to support my work, then you can always go to my Patreon page, and that's just patreon.com/PierceRedmond. And you can become a subscriber for as little as $1 a month. You can also find the links to that on my website. You can sign up to be, for Patreon for Porkins Policy Radio or Porkins Great Game. And if you sign up, you will get access to, if you sign up at the $5 level, you get access to the bonus podcast, of which there is a new episode out, a tribute to one of my heroes, the late great Wayne Barrett, investigative journalist, for the Village Voice, for many, many years, went after Roger Stone, Al Sharpton, Donald Trump, Rudy Giuliani, Ed Koch. Truly a great man who just passed away on the 19th, day before Inauguration Day. And then that guy wrote the book on Donald Trump, too. You know, all the good research comes, the foundation was all from Wayne Barrett. He discovered the Roger Stone, Al Sharpton connections. I did a whole episode on that. People are interested in go back and look up that episode. So, you get access to the bonus podcast. You also, up until February 15th, you will also, and if you are a $5 subscriber, you will have access, exclusive access, to a good friend of the show, Brian Heiss, his documentary, OJ Veritas, The Furman Tapes, probably the best documentary out there on the OJ case and the impact of race and of Mark Furman, and the whole Furman tapes and what was really going on with that. A lot of people kind of get hung up. They say, oh, it's not about race or it's too much about race. Brian really contextualizes all that, and he shows you exactly why it is important, why it doesn't, it shouldn't be overlooked. And it's an unseen documentary. Only a handful of people have seen it. Brian is still trying to kind of shop it around. You'd love to get that on TV. But if you subscribe for a paltry sum of $5 a month, you will be able to watch that documentary up until February 15th. But maybe we can convince Brian to extend that. So, again, if I get more subscribers, then we can extend that, and we can get more people can get access to watch Brian's excellent documentary. And quickly, this is like super silly, but I don't want this to sound like a paid advertisement or anything like that, but I did just, I just got a brand new mattress. It's a Casper mattress, and I got it kind of like on a whim, because in New York at least there's all these like ads for it and stuff, and it's supposed to be like the most comfortable mattress on the planet. I did get one, and it is actually super comfortable. And it's helped my back pain. So if anyone out there is interested in getting a new mattress, and they might want to get a Casper mattress, I can get you $50 off, you can use, it's casper.com/friends/Porkins. So if you use that, if you just use that link, you can get $50 off your next Casper mattress. So they are actually super comfortable. And also, while we're on the promotional giveaways and things like that, faithful listeners will know I'm a huge anime fan. I watch, that's kind of like the current TV that I watch is mostly anime. I watch a ton of anime all the time. And if anyone out there likes anime, then contact me, because I can get you a guest pass on Crunchyroll, which is the best streaming site for anime out there. Anyway, thank you all so much for joining me. Next week, we should have a great conversation with Aaron Smith Levin all about Scientology. But until then, I will talk to you very soon.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Are you feeling embarrassed and stuck because you can't focus or concentrate? I have a confession to make. I spent years unable to think clearly, like I was in a fog. I was going through the motions, running my companies, and I hated feeling groggy and mentally sluggish. I couldn't get ahead like this. It's no secret, the powers that be want us dumbed down. Chemicals, fluoride, our brains are under siege, and we are experiencing lower IQs. But now there's a weapon to fight back and win. Introducing DNA Evolve, a revolutionary breakthrough in a category of cognitive enhancers called nootropics. I've been using DNA Evolve and couldn't feel better. For me, it works. It feels great to get things done again and get ahead. Try a free sample for yourself at DNAEvolveSample.com. That's DNAEvolveSample.com. Supplies are limited, so go to DNAEvolveSample.com right now.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Sensen, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
Yo, what's up? Check this out.
The voice of the revolution. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.